Hiring is challenging, but there's one place you can go where hiring is simple, fast, and smart, a place where growing businesses connect to qualified candidates. That place is ZipRecruiter.com/Ryan Show. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. And right now, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/Ryan Show. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Ryan Show, R-Y-E-N Show. ZipRecruiter.com/Ryan Show. The smartest way to hire. What is going on? So this is it. It's the last one, and it's not even going to be remotely zappy because we've already done the Van Pelt one. We did the Steve one. But we do have a different Steve that we want to make an announcement for. We can't be too specific. And actually, me and my deal probably has literally less than 1% to do with Cerruti's deal. But Cerruti is moving on. And a new gig that you can't say what it is. It is not with the Ringer. He's not working with me is basically all we can say. So congrats to you. And how is your dome right now? Are you freaking out?
No, I'm not freaking out. You know, it's bittersweet. It's something I feel like, I'm excited about. Like I said, I hope to be able to announce what it is soon, but, you know, it's something I felt like I absolutely had to try. And, you know, I've been at ESPN for 8.5 years now. I've been with you for probably 5 maybe. And
we had a little break up there when we talked about Mike and Mike.
Exactly. Yeah. I had the Mike and Mike affair for about a year. Then I came running back. But
they were like, who's one of the best people on SVP and Russillo? All right, let's get him out of there.
Out. This is the morning show.
We can't have somebody who we think is really good on the show. Cool.
But yeah, man, I'm, we're recording this Thursday. Friday's my last day at ESPN. So 8.5 years is kind of wild. I know it's very strange, especially because it's like the summer and like people are kind of off. So it's like, I'm also awkward with goodbyes. Like, I don't like the attention being on me. So I'm just sort of like I don't bring it up with people. I just if they talk to me about it, that's great. But, I don't know, man. I've been fortunate enough in my 8+ years here to, you know, obviously work with you, and you taught me like pretty much everything I know about doing shows and being interesting. So, you know, thank you for that. And then the last couple years about 1.5 years I've been with Will. So it's definitely a difficult decision to move on, but it's one that I'm pretty excited about.
Yeah, I'm really excited for you. You're going to be great. It is a big deal. It is something you needed to do. And you know, it's unbelievable how different this industry is and the opportunities that are there for people and whatever. When I talk to somebody who's younger or somebody's like, hey, what do you think? And you just go, you know, the hardest thing is like people, you want to be a good person. You want to be able to help people, but you really can't help anybody. Like when somebody's like, hey, can you help me get in? Like, get in what? Like, do you think I can get you an IR job? My contract's been up every year for like 3 straight years. So I, you know, no offense, but like on the priority rankings, it's me. And then number 2 is pretty much everybody else. When I can't, like, I don't make any decisions. You know, some people are actually delusional about it. I'd love to be on air and be like, well, that's congrats on your dreams. They're great to have. Like, you know, it doesn't work the way, you know, whether it's finance or different things where it's like, hey, I know a guy, you can do this and do this kind of interview. However, having said all of those things, the thing that makes it more promising for people that want to get into this, like, it used to be impossible. And what I mean by that is that first job to be on the air somewhere, you didn't get it. It was like whatever they offered you, like anything, like guys, like old school guys that are on air now, you know, maybe doing it a lot longer than I have. And they'd start off and they're like, well, I used to change the tapes on church radio. Yep. And I'd say, you know, coming up next. And that was actually like, okay, now I've been on the air. Now you can just start your own podcast. Will anybody listen to it with the sea of podcasts out there? You know, the chances are it's not going to resonate, but if it does, boom, 1-2 years later, you could have like a real thing and be a guy and skip all the BS of trying to apply for all these on-air jobs that everybody else is applying for. And when you think about everybody cranking out of Syracuse, Mizzou, you know, I think Syracuse looked at differently as far as, you know, traditional broadcast. I'm not going to sit here and break down every communication school.
BU, Vermont, Emerson. Quinnipiac, obviously.
Right. I mean, Vermont didn't even have it. I was a political science major. What did you study at Quinnipiac?
Like journalism, but nothing radio related.
Yeah, right. So, you know, before I've told this story before, like I wanted to eventually be on the air. I graduated from Vermont. I was like, this degree is not going to do anything for me. And it wasn't the degree as much as I needed to make contacts. So I'm filling out the Newhouse School application going, all right, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this. And then I magically get a job on the air after sending out a million letters. So, it's challenging now in that the analogy I use is the line is shorter to your destination than it was before. Like, you used to have to grind for like 10 years and then maybe you'd get some fill-in shifts at ESPN, which is kind of what I did. And like, to get those in 10 years felt like insane. Like, man, I can't believe how young. I'm 30 and I'm filling it at ESPN. This is nuts. Well, now it's like there's 27 year olds that I run into that are on the air and they're like, yeah, man, this stuff's just taking way too long. And I'm like, you're an idiot. But whatever. I mean, immediately.
Millennials,
like,
dude, come on.
Yeah, you'd just be 40 and you're going, oh, it's taking too long. You're bummed out, huh? You don't have your own show on ESPN1 at 6 o'clock primetime. But there is a path here now where more and more people are getting opportunities to be on the air in ways that have never ever happened before.
Yeah, I think the cool thing about radio or audio or whatever it is now is there's just a million different ways, like you said. It wasn't just traditionally going and, hey, I'm going to get this, you know, local shift and pick it up and then try to get on the network or whatever. Like, as you said, there's a million podcasts, there's live streams, there's just, you know, Twitter live shows. There's a million different ways that you can do stuff now. So, you know, just kind of figuring out what do you think is worth it for you and what do you want to do? So, you know,
yeah, like some of the ESPN digital shows that have used people that probably wouldn't have been on the air before in those ways, like those are there. Like they're obtainable. Like, I don't know if I'd be graduating from college right now going, all right, by 25, I want to have my own digital show on ESPN. But like 10 years ago, let me tell you that, you would have had a better chance at building your own rocket and flying to the moon. And now it's, you know, depending on what you're bringing to the table and what your background is, I mean, there's a way to actually have some of these things happening. And it's just more and more. I mean, like, look at Smallman. Smallman goes from producing the show with us to being the first ever female full-time talk show host in the St. Louis market.
Mm-hmm.
There's just so many unbelievable stories where you're like, wait a minute, that person started doing what? And now they're this? So it isn't as traditional. It isn't as hard. So, in a way, I think it should be more motivating to people, but the problem is it just means more and more people think they're going to be able to pull this off.
Yeah.
So that's what I always kind of tell younger guys. It's like, if you think of the market, okay, you know, I worked in Boston. How many great radio gigs were there in Boston? Maybe 10. And every year, how many thousands of guys are cranked out of Syracuse and BU and all these other communication schools all over the country? And, you know, how many guys want to work in New York? How many want to work in LA? How many want to work in Boston? And maybe there's 10 to 12 great radio shows or radio gigs total. And thousands of kids are getting pumped out with a couple six figures plus in loans. So, you know, the line is wider, but it's shorter.
Yeah. I mean, and like I said, I'm excited about this opportunity. I will, you know, I want to just obviously thank you for sort of, you know, teaching me along the way and, you know, kind of, I always say this when people ask, because I think, you know, it's, and when Will and I were kind of talking about this yesterday, like, there's a lot of people, I think, in the industry that just think, like, I turn their mic on and I'm just going to be me and that's good enough. And I think you were the kind of guy that, you know, back when I was running the board for SVP and Rosillo and I was like 24, 25, showing me and everyone on the show that's not how you do good shows. Like, it's about preparation. It completely changed the way that I sort of think about and even do shows today and try to, you know, do content. It's like, okay, we need to have a plan. We need to have an idea. We need to have a topic. Like that was the thing that you always sort of like, you know, beat into people's heads in a good way was like, all right, here's a story, but yeah, what's the topic? Like, okay, let's just not like go through ESPN, you know, stories on ESPN.com and just start talking about them because you think you're interesting. It doesn't work that way. Like, you need an angle on stuff. So the way that you've sort of done that has sort of shaped the way that I do my job now with Will or on this show or hopefully in the future. So thank you for that, and thank you for all the opportunities. And, you know, I'll miss sort of doing this with you, but, you know, I'm sure there will be late-night phone calls to talk about trade rumors as their own.
Yeah, right. Yeah, flawed magic rumors or not. But, no, the topic thing is really important because you know, there were times, especially when I was doing like the weekend radio thing when I first started at ESPN, I certainly didn't feel confident enough to challenge stuff. And, you know, but hey, just came across the news wire, Clay Buchholz, 60-day DL, you know, make sure you get that in. And you'd go, yeah. And, you know, then they'd do the segment, like, wow, you know, blow to the Red Sox staff, Clay Buchholz, 60-day DL.
You know, reading off other starters. And
he's always been skinny. you know, I mean, would you plug him in as a game two guy? You know, I don't know, but he had that no hitter. Has he ever really been as good? And you're thinking, like, I'm talking to the entire country right now, like 500 markets, and I'm riffing on Clay Buchholz's injury. And, you know, after a little while, it starts to dawn and you go, this segment sucks. And just because it came across the newswire and just because it's the top story on ESPN.com does not mean that it's even worth trying to spend more than 30 seconds on it.
Yep.
As a topic. And that was something I just would start being brutal about. Like, oh, well, hey, this is, you know, you just have some producers and they go, oh, okay, here are the top three stories that are on ESPN.com. And you'd be like, what? Like, what? What?
Yeah, here's the
like,
hot that's, list.
That's awful.
Get the highlighter out.
Are we trying to do the worst show? What year is it? 97? So I just always think that's really important where you're going. If I'm going to spend 6 or 7 minutes on this topic, there at least has to be some path of conversation that you're like, okay, well, this is this newsworthy item. But if you thought of what it means, if it's all these different things, and once you kind of figure that out, and it's hard to have that internal deal. Like that is the difference. Like, yeah, you can go ahead and start your podcast next week, graduate from CUSE, and you know, you can have a sick tie and some chinos going for your cover shot, but there's an internal clock and there's an internal kind of radar that you'll either have or you won't have. Cause, and I'm telling you right now, some hosts never had it, which blows my mind that they've made it this far, but you have to have this little thing in your head where you go, is this like, could I listen to the segment? Would I care about the ending of this segment if I were in the car? And, you know, some people figure it out and some people don't. So are you going to have to move?
No, which is pretty awesome.
You don't have to move?
No.
Are you going to have time off then between your last day and the first day of this?
I've got a couple, well, the, how do I, couple, I've got a couple days before, like next week I have mostly have off, and before I, you know, get in the door, I guess I should say. The actual thing itself doesn't start for another couple of weeks, so. We got plenty
this
of time.
This would be amazing if like we're doing this whole thing and then you announce that you became a bounty hunter.
Yeah, well, yesterday I was
like, why did they talk about podcasts for so long?
Yesterday, yeah, we were talking about on Will's show because it was like, all right, you know, send us in ideas of what you think I would potentially be doing in the future. And one guy was
smart.
One guy I think called in and was like, he's going to be like the corporate responsibility, you know, social media guy for the Orlando Magic. And I was like, well, no, I'm not going to, that is not going
to
be my job.
Would you have taken that job if I was able to get that for you?
I don't think so, because
you're not edgy enough.
I'm not, corporate responsibility probably wouldn't have been my thing.
What if you just did their Twitter feed? What if they paid you what you're getting paid now?
Twitter though. I'm not good at like running show accounts or professional accounts. Like I like the way I run my account or I like, you know, your account. I like, there's plenty of personal accounts I like, but I'm not good at the like corporate account thing. Like, I wouldn't be able to just, like, run the ESPN handle because constantly I just look at that and I'm like, I would have never thought about that. I don't know. I'm not sure I'm into that. Or like, oh, that's a good idea. I would have never thought about that, you know?
You'd have to retweet Taco Tuesday all the time.
Yeah, and that stuff I don't want to do. Or like, hey, you know.
That Taco Tuesday thing is one of the lamest pieces of content going on in the world today. And I like LeBron, but it's just, like, the way people are like, oh, my God, he did the Taco Tuesday video. Holy, get that up now.
Yeah.
A couple fire emojis. Let's get it going. Let's get it on all the platforms. But again, you know what? People watch it. So, you know, who am I to judge?
I know.
People
watch it. We're wrong. But,
yeah, I'm totally wrong. Totally wrong.
But I guess I look at that and I go, you know, I know that's a win, but like, I just, that's not for me. But I also, this goes back to the LeBron thing. I'm just like, I just, you know, it's not an anti-LeBron thing. I'm as probably as pro-LeBron, especially on the court as people get, but there's some social media stuff with him where I'm like, God, man, you're trying so hard.
Yeah, I don't get those videos. But again, you know, like you'd have a producer come in and be like, okay, the A's, we're going to do a little Taco Tuesday react.
Yep.
And then we'll get to the B's and I'd be like, yeah, what's the Taco Tuesday topic? what are we doing with that one?
Well, there's a lot of content too. Like, it's not just the ESPN account, but all accounts now are like this date in, you know, 20 years ago, and it's like a movie thing, where it's like this date 20 years ago, like the Remember the Titans, you know, got the win over whatever team they were playing in that movie, and you're like, all right, cool.
You know what I thought was interesting though on like the 20 years, because it's starting to happen more now that it's been around for a decade, but you know, Andrew Luck retires, and it took a little longer to make it a race issue, which I was a little disappointed in social media that I was like, we took you guys 2 days to make this racism. That's, come on. Like, let's pick this up. We need, within 6 hours, this needs to be a racist story. And it was the, what would happen if Cam retired? And like, even in my brain, I tried to do like a, would there be a, you know, hey, Cam quit on his team. Like, would we look at it in a negative way? In a more negative way than we did for Andrew Luck. You know, like, I still think there's part of this with Andrew Luck where you go, I can understand fans being upset. Booing seems excessive. Booing is booze and it being preseason, which sucks anyway. And you get a couple beers and you decide to boo Andrew Luck and then other people chime in. I wouldn't ever do it, but I can also understand a Colts fan selfishly being great. Like, our season probably going to suck now. Like, that's kind of the whole reason any of us have jobs about this, because people are passionate and they care about their teams and they're emotional about it, all right? So then it was this look at the way Barry Sanders was talked about when he retired in the 90s, and look at all the support that there is for Andrew Luck. And, of course, then it immediately turns it, okay, well, this is the way we're talking about a white guy. This is the way we're talking about a black guy. What we need to do, though, is, like, think if in let's just say 10 to 15 years. And whatever there is, whatever the thing that's the version of social media that we'll have then, and somebody posts a thing where they post, like, I'll just say it, like a Skip Bayless tweet about LeBron James, then go, this is the way they talked about LeBron James in 2019. He'd be like, well, wait a minute. That's the way that guy talked about him, which almost no one agreed with, and essentially everybody knew it was his gimmick, his routine to find anything he can and then spin it into a negative LeBron, because that's his thing. Like, of all the things you have, like, hey, this guy's a little bit of this guy's this, like, you know, Cowherd is just anti-Baker Mayfield. Whatever is going to happen with Baker Mayfield, Cowherd is going to spin that into this is me. My brand is I'm anti-Baker. My brand is I'm pro-Brady. You know what I mean? Like, we all kind of have some of our things. I'm anti-nonsense, and I'm pro trying to sort through it all and come up with the truth of it all. So whenever I'll see this thing, like, oh, 25 years ago, this is what somebody said about this, and you go, okay, but was that the general I just remember the Barry Sanders thing being like, Detroit's such a mess. I don't know that I really blame him, but it sucks because the guy's awesome and I selfishly wanted to keep watching him play football. But, and I'm not trying to say my sensibilities in the 90s when Sanders retired were the sensibilities of an entire nation of football players, but I don't remember it being really nasty. And yet we find a version of that where it was really nasty, and then we compare it to support for today's players, which is really way more, and I don't think this is debatable at all, it has very little to do with race and far more to do with the fact that we're just more supportive of athletes, and we're way more sympathetic to football players that want to retire after a large chunk of the media in this country bashed the sport and rooted for its demise and paraded around lower rating stories for an entire season like this thing was over, which was ridiculous. And in a byproduct of that is that, okay, yes, we're cheering on and supportive in a way we've never been as supportive of players deciding to walk away from this game at a really young age, a guy like Andrew Luck. Like, that to me was a really easy roadmap to get to with all those things. So I do think whenever we do some of those, you know, 10 years from now, whatever, like, imagine saying, like, this is what Mike Greenberg thought of this is how they talked about Geno Smith his rookie year. And it's a greeny tweet being like, Geno Smith, it's not when he'll be in the Hall of Fame or if he'll be in the Hall of Fame, it'll be when he's in the Hall of Fame. And be like, are we going to actually use that as like real evidence as a taste of what people thought of that player at that time? Cause that's really misleading and kind of stupid. So.
No, I would say people just don't, they lack the context of, you're 100% right, of just like, you know, whether it's eras, whether it's, you know, how we feel about players. But, you know, tell me, you know, this was my kind of thing on the Luck thing too, is you should respect whatever person, whatever decision they want to make. If Andrew Luck doesn't want to play football anymore, that's totally fine. But I also don't have to treat him like he's a hero for doing this, you know? Like, I think, I can just say, all right, the guy doesn't want to play anymore. Cool. Like, he wants to travel around Europe and hang out and live his life and not be, you know, not feel pain, you know, 20, 30 years from now. That's, I totally respect that decision. But I think there was like this huge group of people, mostly on Twitter, but some even on the airways that wanted to just like applaud him for being so brave and heroic for doing this. And I just didn't see it that way.
No, I didn't go there with it at all. I think that's from the football demise.
It's not
crowd.
Though. It was a lot of it wasn't just the football demise people. It was people who love the sport and who are in the sport and who write about it or talk about it for a living. I was kind of surprised that it was met with that. And maybe it's because he got booed and it was like, hey, let's be on the complete opposite side of this and show him support. And I understand that because I think
the
booing was ridiculous too. But I don't want to make this guy out into a hero all of a sudden.
Okay, but here's what it is, and this is specific to the players themselves. The players for years now, you know, they check their mentions, they have a bad game, a bunch of fantasy morons rip them all day long, and now in their world, they think the entire world is out to get them because they missed week 7 with a knee injury, and these people are like, you're human meat, okay? You are my possession because I drafted you on a fantasy team, okay? That person that sends in that content to a player is the absolute worst. You're one step above adult that rips high school football recruit on Facebook, okay? Like that guy's the worst fantasy guy that complains. And like, I know some of you guys listening right now are going, oh, well, whatever, I've done it. It's stupid. It's so stupid. Like, hey, how come you can't get out there and play, you know? And it's just, you can't do that. So now it turns into, even if the whole world, that's not the majority of the world, because I don't think it is, but when it's happening to you all the time, that's the way you look at it and you say, okay, fine. Like if I did a segment that no one liked and 100 people on Twitter after the show said that segment was terrible, I would only go by the people's reactions that I saw. I'd be like, man, that thing went really, really bad. And you know what? Maybe I heard from a vocal minority that just didn't like what I had to say during that segment. And most of the thousands of listeners were sitting there going like, you know what? This is good. So now the player, in a way we've never seen before, is like more anti the audience, and it's like, you know, if you only see me as this possession, like I think what you had was a ton of players coming to Andrew Luck's side being like, good for you, you don't owe anyone anything, and on and on and on. And it's like, well, no, but I mean, it's still the reality of being passionate about this is that I don't want a really good quarterback to retire at 29 a week before the season starts, and now my season may suck. Like, is it okay to be bummed out about that? And I think the current player, the former player, is so anti the fan. And that's I think, the danger of what's happening in some of this stuff, is that gap between feeling like you're playing for the fan and now kind of hating the fan, I think that gap is getting wider and wider, and I think that's why you saw so much support for Luck.
That's fair.
Yeah, I don't know. That's one of my working theories. We'll see. Because that's a part of the thing with sports that is turning me off to it a little bit, in that it feels like every pro athlete now feels like they have the worst job ever, and they're telling us how much their life sucks.
Yeah, one of my favorite Frank Isola tweets was like, he was talking about the shop, and it was essentially just like, you know, at what barbershop or like a bunch of guys are sitting around talking about how, you know, crappy their jobs and lives are. You know, like that's not reality. Like, that's not what this is. So that's why I've always sort of wondered about that show, and specifically about like athletes in general who just like, yeah, there are always going to be fans who just suck, and they're like, that's, and now they have a voice and they can go right to players, so obviously the players are going to be more vocal about people being against them. But I don't know, man, it's hard for me, getting back to the Luck thing and that whole thing, it's hard for me to have that much sympathy for these guys sometimes, when I know that, like, you know, they probably wouldn't trade lives with most other people in the world.
Yeah, like there was a tweet today, and it was from an NFL agent saying, just reminder, make sure that you understand 1,100 players are going to lose their jobs today. And, you know, that's horrible. And went, well, if I were an undrafted wide receiver who was likely 12th on the depth chart in camp, and for whatever reason these cut down the numbers, the bodies that they use in camp, if I knew I was likely in that group of 54 on down, like, did I really lose a job, or did I sign up for something that the odds were completely stacked against me? And if it were some miracle that I made the 53-man roster by week one, you know, sometimes it's just like, hey, actually, what you're trying to do is really, really hard, And if you want to pursue it, that's awesome. Pursue it. You're young. You're an athlete. Let's see if it can work out. Maybe you beat all the odds. Maybe you impress somebody in camp. Maybe you grind in the CFL for 2 years, and then you come back and play receiver in the NFL. But this whole thing, like, when I supposed to take a knee this afternoon and go, hey, I can't believe 1,100 guys lost their jobs today. You know, like, let me just do a quick moment of silence. You know, like, not all of us get to do everything we want to do. Okay? Like, there's stuff, you can sign up for stuff, and, you know, I don't know. It's getting, I think that disconnect is dangerous. I think that disconnect is dangerous, especially when it's some of the NBA guys. It's like, wait a minute, so you can take off like 30% of the season and still make max money because you just don't want to play? Oh, okay. That's cool. It's like, how dare you? He's a human being. Like, well, wait a minute. What? Like, what? Like, hey, I bought season tickets and I have kids and you play in half the games. Yeah, sorry. Sorry, man. I have to protect my body. Like, yeah, it's hoops. Like, a lot of you guys are still doing all right later on. Yeah, well, I'm not just an asset to you. Like, yeah, I don't know. Like, you got drafted and they have your contract and they can trade you for other guys. It's kind of how sports work. It's not that bad of a gig. You make like 30, 40 million plus. Sorry. Need to get updated with the times. All right, now I'm just ranting. Let's do this. Let's talk about wine, and then let's talk to David Pollack, get his college football playoff picks. I'll do mine as well, and we'll just kind of run through the landscape of the top teams in college football. Saving money on award-winning wine you're guaranteed to love has never been easier with First Leaf. Unlike other wine clubs that guess about your favorite wines, First Leaf uses your feedback and ratings to curate wine selections personalized to your unique taste. First Leaf is so confident in the quality of their wine, they even have 100% satisfaction guarantee. That means if you're not feeling a particular bottle of wine, First Leaf will cover it completely. You're a big First Leaf guy. I've talked about the Pinot Noir deal going on. I'm looking at a bottle right now here in my rack. We keep this one outside, although a lot of people like a chilled Cabernet, which is something I learned recently. So there you go. A little early to be looking at this, but you know, just it looks good. Although I just have one, and then somebody would be like, "Is that a rack or what are you doing over there?" All right, enough about decorating. I got started by taking the First Leaf wine quiz to assess my exact wine drinking preferences, from sweetness to wine styles to even how adventurous I am. They learned all about what I like. First Leaf then created an introductory six-pack of wine for me, all for just $29.95. Seriously, an introductory six-pack of wine for $29.95. These wines normally go for at least $20 a piece. When my bottles arrived, I tasted and rated them online. First Leaf took my ratings and selected unique wines based on my taste for my next shipment. In fact, First Leaf sends out more than 17,000 unique shipments of wine every month. This company's blowing up because everyone's tastes are different. Try First Leaf Wine Club today, where buying great wine is simple. Sign up with my link and you get an exclusive intro offer. 6 bottles of wine for only $29.95 plus free shipping. Just go to tryfirstleaf.com/Russillo. That's R-U-S-S-I-L-L-O, 2 S's, 2 L's. That's 6 bottles of wine for only $29.95 plus free shipping at tryfirstleaf.com/Russillo. Okay, one of the great things about traveling over the years for college football is hanging out with a guy like Pollack. And I will always remember this because we were at LSU working out at Moffitt's place there in his gym, which it is his gym. And we were talking about Tua. So it was right before Bama-LSU, and you were like, what do you think of Tua? And I just, you know, look, I mean, he'd put up absurd numbers. I also think the receivers are nuts, but you were talking about him in a different way, and the way he looked off defensive players and the way he looked down the field in a way that you thought was like more advanced than NFL guys. So I'm not saying like, hey, he was hurt and now there's this correction on him, but are you still as in love with Tua today as you were last year?
Yeah. I mean, he's unbelievable. He's special. And listen, I know, you know, it's interesting. A couple weeks ago, Marcus Spears said he's one of the most overrated players I think he's in college football. And
man. I know.
Talked about he has struggled against great defenses. Now, the injuries have been a big concern for that. But what we talked about, which is unique, is, you know, as defensive players, we're taught to read body language and demeanor of a quarterback. So if a quarterback turns and goes to use half the field, well, now I cut off half the field. Now I have to read, and as a safety, I start to lean to the other side of the field. And you've seen great quarterbacks like Tom Brady do this for years, but Tua has this unbelievable ability to literally, before he throws, he gives like a little shoulder fake. It's like a little it's like a little, it's like a pump fake basketball, Ryan. Like literally leans forward like he's going to throw the football and then naturally recoils and fires in like 0.2 seconds. So he just, he manipulates the defense so well with his ability to be able to do that. And then improv and scramble and timing and anticipation. The only knock for him has literally been, can he stay healthy? And you spend time around him, I'm sure, too. He's not a big guy. I mean, he's a little guy. So he's, you know, the taking the hits and managing the hits. Saban talked to him this whole offseason and the end of last season about being smart, getting rid of the ball. I know you like to make those Russell Wilson plays, those improv plays, but you got to live to fight another day, and that'll be a focus for him this season. But he's just got, he's got a knack to be able to pump fake and head fake and do things that a lot of quarterbacks can't do that screws up defenses.
I'm really not quite sure what to believe on some of the weigh-in numbers for him, because sometimes, like, he's listed at, like, just under 220 in some spots, and then some other places have tried to say he's up to 230. No, but I've seen some places try to say, no, he's a lot thicker than that and all that stuff. Like, for Spears to say he's bad against great defenses, he got the you-know-what knocked out of him towards the end of the year. I mean, he could barely move side to side at the end of it. I just think that's such a massive overreaction, and now say, oh, good defense is, this guy sucks. Like, it's, well, always kind of funny. Like, when Saban, people are like, oh, dual threat QBs hurt Saban. You know, like, or he's lost like four games in half a decade. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Great players that win Heisman's, like Cam Newton and Johnny Manziel, are really good against Nick Saban. Sure. You know what's interesting? I think that here's the deal. Great quarterbacks, regardless, struggle against great defenses. When you play great defenses, you don't usually typically see guys put up those Arkansas numbers where he's thrown for five touchdowns and five throws and Louisville numbers. So that happens, but I think Tua does have to show us that he can stay healthy and that he can play great against, you know, playoff competition later in the season. He struggled big time at Georgia. Now, listen, he was injured, and then he turns around and he lights Oklahoma up, who doesn't play good defense, and then struggles in the championship game against Clemson with a couple turnovers. So I understand why there might be a little pause for concern, but when you watch the guy, it's just, it's kind of nonsense to think that he's not, you know, one of the best quarterbacks we've seen in the last, 10 years.
Yeah, I just think it's a little too soon to start saying stuff like, oh, well, against any good defense, he's just gonna struggle.
Is it too soon to say Trevor Lawrence is the greatest quarterback ever? Is it too soon for that, or are we jumping the ship on that or no?
That feels a little premature. and he's awesome. I mean, like, what complaints could I possibly have against him? I don't. I mean, there isn't any. You know, one of the things that I thought was really, I don't know how many people had said it, but I just, like, some of these theories that we come up with where somebody said, well, the only reason that Dabo played Hunter Lawrence is that he needed him, or excuse me, Trevor Lawrence. I always do the Hunter Johnson thing. He needed Trevor Lawrence to beat Alabama. And you're like, so he would have, if Bama weren't as good, played Kelly Bryant all year long? Like, that doesn't, that doesn't make any sense to me. So I don't, I mean, do you see any flaws in Trevor's game or no?
Trevor's the first guy I've ever seen come into college as a true freshman. And literally I look at him and say that after that season, he would be the number one pick in the NFL draft. Like, I've never, since my time of covering people, I've never been able to see that. And, you know, he's got the maturity, because if you ever spend some time around him, he's cool and he's calm, and you can tell nothing rattles the guy. He's one of the knocks, I think, people would say in the beginning was, oh, he's just not very athletic. Yeah, he is. He's very athletic. And if you watch him, he can really run. He's big. He's already strong and physically mature. He's got anticipation. So, no, there's nothing he can't do. Now, the thing with him that I'll be very interested, the team last year with Clemson, you could tell, like, I've been around very few leaders as good as Christian Wilkins. That guy was so special in the ability to put teammates first and really build an unbelievable locker room. The only question mark I have for Clemson is just leadership. Who's the guys that step up? Trevor is a more quiet guy, more cerebral guy, you know, but somebody has to take that mantle from Farrell and Wilkins and these guys that played all these games and were looked to as the leader and the guys that stood in front of the team. So I think that'll be the question mark for Clemson and for Lawrence, is how does his leadership continue to develop, and does he be more vocal, and is he comfortable doing that? Because some kids aren't.
Okay, so you're headed to the Auburn-Oregon game, which has a bunch of storylines pre-written, and I already know what every – depending on the outcome, I know what everybody's going to be saying after that game. From a personnel standpoint, though, does Auburn's D-line have a chance to be as good as Clemson's D-line?
From last year?
Yeah.
No, I don't think they're as versatile. You know, like Christian Wilkins is a guy that literally you could put him at three technique or you could put him at defensive end. And just you can mask your front and really you don't really know what front they're in. It's a very smart player. And then Farrell's ability to just rush the passer. I don't think Auburn has a guy like that that can just say he's going to get the quarterback, you know, whether it's against Jonah Williams or not. It doesn't matter. So, no, I don't think they're as good. I think they're going to be dominant. I think they're going to be very physical. They're not the pass rushers that those guys are, but they are very, very good. And here's what I'm very interested in finding. Oregon obviously has a great offensive line. We've seen them the last year really take Cristobal's demeanor and take it, and they got some nasty to him, which I love seeing. Auburn's thing is going to be, for me, do they catch Herbert and get him on the ground? Because I think they can disrupt Oregon's plans, and they can stop them from running the football, but can they stop Herbert from running the football? Can they stop Herbert from scrambling around and making extra plays and get it where it's not all about those first guys where now you're playing your sixth, seventh, eighth defensive lineman and make it a fourth quarter game and really weather the storm early? But I think there's a – it's going to be really fun to watch the battles of the trenches, but it's really fun to watch Herbert too. And if we're going to talk about quarterbacks, Ryan, and talk about all these guys across the country, Herbert gets a lot of attention and a lot of pub. He needs to learn how to make free throws more. All right, he's a really good player. He's really great, and he's got great ability. But he's got to hit those free throws that are easy shots that he misses pretty consistently. You know, Marcus Mariota, he came from out of a different offense and all that stuff, but his accuracy was never questioned. Justin Herbert, he's got all the size of 6'4", 6'5", 240, can run. I mean, looks the part like crazy. You watch it. I remember watching him in warm-ups last year before the Stanford game. I'm like, good God, that dude can zip it. I mean, he's got all that stuff, but he doesn't have – he misses a lot of throws that I feel like he should be able to make at his caliber with his ability. So that'll be a big thing to watch too is can Herbert improve and not be a guy that's – I look at it and I go, man, the potential's there to be a superstar, but he's not maximizing it.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think when he first – came onto the scene is like, oh, wait a minute, because I mean he's an unheralded guy, he was a local guy. I don't think anybody thought he was going to be this good, certainly not in the conversation to be the number one overall pick, but he really can run. Like when you start seeing him get out there, you're like, damn, this kid is athletic, and like he's got some shift to him. I mean, none of that stuff really matters if you can't throw it from the pocket, and the intermediate throw stuff, you just, you know, everybody always says like, oh, he'll figure that out, or, you know, and every time like there's a guy who's intermediate inaccurate, I just think it's kind of silly when it's like, oh, he'll figure that out. Because a lot of those guys don't figure that out. Like the touch throw, the throw where it's like, okay, I have to think a little bit more. It's almost like a bad shooter in basketball where if a guy doesn't have any time to even think about what he's doing, he has a better chance of making the shot than he does when he's just wide open and he knows he's supposed to take it. So I think that's really smart that you say it that way. They should at least, with their O-line potential, with all those draft picks there, be able to at least match up there with a little bit with Auburn. But I guess just 2 years of no Pac-12 and the Pac-12 only having a couple teams in this whole run of all these playoffs, I fear if Auburn wins is maybe the fifth best team in the SEC that everyone's going to want to write off the Pac-12 immediately, when in fact, like, that doesn't – it perception-wise, maybe it comes into play at the end of the year when the playoff committee's putting these teams together, but there's a really good chance that the outcome of this game doesn't mean anything for the best team in the Pac-12.
No, but I tell you what, is it safe to say that they lose that game in the way that college football's gone the last 2 years, that now they're putting themselves in a position where if they're a one-loss Pac-12 team against any conference in Power 5 conference in college football, they'll be left out?
If any conference are going to be left out?
If it's all Power 5 conferences and you're comparing one-loss people against each other, and Oregon has that loss to Auburn. Now, listen, there's still other opportunities for the Pac-12. I mean, if Notre Dame can beat Georgia and then Stanford or USC can beat Notre Dame, you know, it makes it, at a conference, it makes it look obviously a little bit stronger, a little bit better. But I'm just saying perception and reality in the end of the season. If Oregon loses to Auburn, and Auburn is the fifth best team, and you start getting down the road to you know, all these one-loss teams and all these different conferences, I think the Pac-12 is going to be in a bad way, and they'll be the team that they can't hold up against any of the other conferences probably.
Yeah, I think it'd be a chip, you know, whatever arguments, all the different arguments that we have, like, no, this means more than this and all these different things. And everybody basically just argues for whatever they want to be true, not necessarily what they think is right. Yeah, I totally get that part of it. It's just that it's going to be, if Oregon loses that game, it's going to be this completely writing off of a conference before they've even got to week two, which I, you know, I'm going to push back on a little bit is my only point. So what do you think has been wrong with the Pac-12 then?
Well, I mean, they definitely, if I'm watching them and I'm watching the play of the defensive line, the play of the offensive line and the physicality, you know, you saw that from Stanford a couple years ago and you really liked what you saw, but, you know, that disappeared. And Stanford's another team I feel like that, you know, they've lost a lot of that luster that they had, that intellectual brutality in the defensive side of the football. And I just think that there are teams that have, first of all, they've struggled out of conference greatly. I mean, that's been something that you've seen consistently. And I think they've been pretty good. They just, you know, the SEC for a number of years, Ryan, had Alabama, and everybody else was kind of like, but they're the team, you know. And now ACC has Clemson, and they're like, ACC's the best. Well, no, you have Clemson. Clemson's leading the way. They need somebody to lead the way. You know, they need somebody to be in the playoff picture. They need somebody to make hay in the postseason and actually win some out-of-conference stuff. And you've seen that from other conferences. It's not total leagues. We know that. It's teams in those conferences that a lot of times, you know, carry the mantle. But the deficiencies in the Pac-12 offensive defensive line, like, look at Clemson. Their defensive line was just stupid and filthy. And that was an AC. NC State a couple years ago. You just, when was the last time you've seen great playmakers in the trenches for defense for the Pac-12? Look at Cristobal and what he's doing. Like, the number one thing he's been able to do now, and he's starting to do, the first ever top 10 class in the history of Oregon football, a ton of offers in the South. Like, they're coming to get guys across the country. And obviously with the Pac-12 now, with USC taking shots across the bow, you know, Chip Kelly comes in and supposed to do great things at UCLA. I think we're going to get a different version of Chip than we ever even thought about getting at Oregon. But there's not a lot of momentum for one team that creates juice, that creates playoff talk, that creates, you know, excitement and momentum.
Yeah, I definitely agree on the front. Like, I look at some of the middle linebackers and stuff, I'm like, man, these guys all look small. And I don't know how that happened, because I think for years, especially when you looked at NFL prospects and stuff, the Pac-12 was kind of underrated. But the Cristobal thing's hilarious, because now being in the West Coast, like, USC fans are going, I thought this Oregon run was supposed to be over. Like, I thought we were supposed to get all of our California kids back. And Oregon took it up to a whole nother level, and USC's going, like, what the hell? What is going on here? Like, I thought this thing was done, and it's completely different. Like, Cristobal doesn't care.
No. And did you ever think you saw a day where, hey, I'm USC. Go visit that facility and look at the quarterbacks and the names. Ryan, they're running an air raid offense this year at USC. Like, just think about that. Like, that is an offense that is predicated and built upon, I don't have those dudes and those guys. Like, I have to find a way to move the ball in a different way. And it's USC. Like, that's amazing to me that's the storyline. And it might work well. And we've never really seen that. I mean, what's the most powerful school you've seen the air raid at where you got dudes? You know, usually it's the smaller schools that have to overcompensate for something they don't have. So it might be genius with a really good quarterback and freak show wide receivers, but that's USC and they have to resort to that. That's amazing.
Okay, but how different is, like, what Urban was doing when he was at Florida? And then I know that the reason a lot of the pros love Lincoln Riley is that there's some real pro concepts there. But, I mean, wouldn't we say these are still variations of what smaller schools had to run with lesser personnel?
Yeah, I mean, it is. They're definitely able to do that more. But when it comes down to it, I think you don't lose the run game. Lincoln Riley doesn't lose the run game. You know, like
right.
Urban
yeah.
Meyer
yeah.
was built upon the run game. It yeah. wasn't like it was built upon a physical. I'm going to hit you in the mouth first. Like you're going to understand this is physical. This isn't like Mike Leach's system is not physical. I mean, the true air raid is not physical. It is. Everybody's in a two-point stance, for God's sake, on the offensive line, okay? You're not
yeah,
physical
stand
on the
up
offensive line when you're
in
a two-point stance. Yeah, and it's literally, you're going to get six-man boxes, and you're just spitting the ball out on the perimeter as fast as you can, try to get five, six, dink and dunk, run 6,000 plays and make their tongue hang out and wear the other opposing, you know, team out. So, you know, if USC changes it up and it's a physical variation and you got guys that hammer people and run the ball, then – yes, it's similar, more similar to Lincoln and Riley and those guys, but it'll be interesting to watch them and see.
No, it is a really good point, though, because I think one of the USC selling points forever was that, you know, we don't have to do that stuff. We get the best kids out of California, one of the three best states of doing this, and we're going to get you pro ready at quarterback.
Yeah.
Now it's like, can we get the other Texas Tech guy? And I hope it works out for Graham Harrell, because if it doesn't, there's no way Helton's keeping that job. I mean, there's no zero.
No.
I wanted to ask you about Jalen Hurts at Oklahoma because I think it's worth bringing up. There's a reason, not just because Tua was awesome, but Jalen, despite the numbers, despite the wins, despite, you know, what should have been a national title on his end because he did his job with a game-winning touchdown until Clemson came down and had their game-winning touchdown. We all saw it. We were all there for it. Jalen was limited as a passer, and to just assume that Jalen's going to be the next guy, and yeah, I did not think Kyler Murray would be the number one pick in the draft after he transferred for A&M, despite him being one of the best athletes I thought I'd ever seen at the position. You know, you could go back in time and say Baker Mayfield's going to end up being this, and you would have said no, but I know that those guys throw it around the field a lot more than I've ever seen Jalen. So what are your expectations for him from what you've seen and then him adapting to this kind of offense?
I think, first of all, he got elected captain before he's even been there for a calendar year or even played a game with these guys. So it kind of gives you a good idea of what Jalen Hurts is. Jalen Hurts is a positive dude, son of a coach. Like, he gets it. He understands it. And Jalen Hurts, and I will say this, Ryan, he improved greatly last year sitting on the bench and watching. Because when I saw Jalen Hurts come in the game at Georgia in the SEC championship game, I would have said the year before that this game's over, Georgia's going to win. But it wasn't yeah. just his legs. His ability to throw the football and make some really good passes. Lincoln Riley will take what Jalen Hurts does best. If you think it's going to look like Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray, I think you're wrong. I think it's going to look a lot different. I think it's going to be – I don't think the tempo will be as fast. I don't think they'll be able to do as much, but I think he's still a ball coach that realizes Jalen Hurts can throw the ball short – he can throw short passes, intermediate passes. He can run the heck out of it. He's got a lot of weapons that can make plays on the outside. I find it really hard to believe that we're going to find the transfer magic 3 years in a row. And I think Oklahoma's offense will be good because of the league they play in isn't very good. We know that defensively. But we also know that Lincoln Riley is the best offensive coach, and he'll maximize what he is. I don't expect anything close to what Kyler Murray did a year ago.
Yeah, the design runs for Jalen, he'll probably be better than any of those guys. Not that, you know, Kyler's the most dynamic runner. I mean, I would put him up there with the elite of that I've ever seen running the football. But at the same time, like Jalen, you're right, like third and three, zone read on the outside, like he's going to get you those 3 yards. He is, and he's a strong kid, and he was really, really great at that. I just think that to really spread it around the way those other guys have, you're going to have to go through progressions, and maybe he improved a ton, and I thought his attitude was great. I mean, what else could you want from a guy? Can't imagine how disappointed you would be to be this Heisman hopeful, winning a title, maybe in your freshman year not happening, and then you lose your job. But I just always felt like it was kind of one read and tuck.
Yeah. And then what you just said I think is important. There is an area where he's better than both Baker and Kyler. And it's not as a elusive runner for Kyler, but he's a tailback. I mean, Jalen is built like a tailback. He's got a thick trunk, lower set, mid section, you know, lower section. So he's powerful. He can cut. He can break tackles. And so I think when you're talking about this offense, and I think the biggest concern for me is four of those five guys last year, you know, three of those guys were drafted in the first day, you know, 2 days. So they were high picks and good offensive lines. Replacing that up front will be just as interesting. But his ability to run the ball with some power and keep the sticks moving and the chains moving and keep the tempo up, that'll be the area where he'll probably be better than both those other guys.
Who are your playoff picks?
The first three were, well, first of all, you know, everybody in the world has the first two, Clemson and Alabama. I got Georgia as the third one, and I think I got Utah as the fourth one. So I thought
everybody loves Utah. I love it. This is hilarious.
I love Kyle Whittingham first, and he's always been a guy, Ryan, that's maximized what he's had, but he's always had less than everybody. I don't think he has less than everybody this year. I think he's got the best defensive line probably in college football and one of the deepest ones that he can rotate in and out and stay healthy. And you watched last year the stretch when they were killing it offensively. Huntley was playing unbelievably well. Zach Moss was playing unbelievably. It's like tackling a tree stump, by the way. That dude is just built low to the ground, quick and fast and powerful. He, you know, Covey comes back now from injury. I think they're a team that, and listen, they don't play Oregon like we just talked about. They don't play Stanford. You know, they got to think about Utah's schedule. But what are you really worried about? They open with tonight with BYU, and I know it's a rivalry game. They're always close, so it'll probably be a pretty good game. They play Washington State, Washington, and USC. That's their schedule. Are you favoring them in all those games?
Well, of course.
Probably.
Yeah.
I mean, so they're literally a team that we're going to be looking at late in the season going, they're 100% going to be in the mix and might get a playoff spot and might be undefeated, because I think they're going to be a really, really solid team. Now, I'm not saying they're going to get in the playoffs and do something with it. I think Georgia has the best chance to dethrone Alabama and Clemson. I think Georgia has something I haven't seen from them in years. They got three or four guys, Ryan, that can put their hand in the ground and go get the quarterback. And I think that might differentiate them between Clemson and Alabama. I think they might have more guys that can make Tua's life and Trevor's life more difficult and be more Clemson-esque from last year to create those negative plays and to be able to rotate guys in for the tempo purposes as well. Georgia, I think Georgia will be interesting this year.
Yeah, I picked them to win the whole thing, and I'll admit I was doing it strictly to be different and to leave Alabama out of it. No, but I mean, to think Alabama, like, if you ever said, hey, they're going to start this playoff thing and Alabama's going to be in the first four, which happened, is nuts. And the fact that they're, you know, I was going through McShay and Kuiper stuff last night, and you're like, okay, Alabama has 10 guys in the top 60 or something. And I was like, geez. You know, so like they lose a linebacker, and people are like, oh, this is devastating. We're like, they lose a stud every year on defense, and you don't even notice sometimes. I know that sounds ridiculous, but it's true.
Yeah, Dylan is the
no
best.
Dylan's yeah right. I
he's
get
the
it.
Best. So I but you know he's definitely one of those guys that. Well, here's the thing: they've already had one injury to that spot that's season-ending. Now you throw in another. Your best backer now probably is Terrell Lewis if you look at ability, but he hadn't been able to stay on the field the last two seasons. So I think it all adds up for the, and especially if you're going to go try to stop daggum Trevor Lawrence. You know, I mean, you got to stop that animal. You better be willing to play a lot of guys. You better be willing to play a lot of guys and play guys that can go sideline to sideline. He's one of those guys. But yeah, I understand what you're saying. They're still going to be super talented, but that definitely, and now it makes it your one injury away now from even more. You know, even more issues and even more issues because you hadn't even started the season and you lost three guys of importance at the linebacker spot. That's not good.
No, I'll give you that. It's just that I remember, you know, watching Lewis at the beginning of one season. I'm like, you know how hard it is to stand out sometimes as one of the backers in their system? Not saying that there aren't awesome linebackers in Alabama, but I'm just saying there are so many good ones that sometimes you lose track, and then you'll be like, wait a minute, is this guy actually, like, incredibly good? Is like, he's even better than the other 3 5-star guys they have there. And Lewis, you're right, doesn't stay healthy, but there's times where I've watched him where I go, this guy's insane.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, when I read a headline like this injury devastating, like Alabama's definition of devastating and other programs, I think, are different. So that's kind of the way I've always looked at that. Before I let you go, I was going back and doing some Pollock history the other night just to double check.
That's
here.
Scary.
Yeah. Hey, so when you came in as a fullback, they redshirted you the whole year, and that's what is that? Do I have that right?
At Georgia?
Yeah.
No, I came in as a fullback in 2001 when I signed. When I signed with Georgia, and everybody got hurt on the defensive ball in training camp, so they threw me at defensive tackle for training camp, and then I ended up playing defensive tackle the whole year. My only sophomore year is when I moved to defensive end for the first time.
Okay, all right, yeah, because they have like your game log is kind of messed up, and then you ended up becoming what, first team all SEC, the 3 years you played at DN, right?
Yeah, I was first team all American my 3 years at defensive end. It was really fun. It was a good switch. It was a switch that felt really comfortable and really home. I never played defensive end a day in my life until I moved to defensive end when I was at Georgia. That's why, hey, Ryan, that's why I tell people all the time, all these people that think they play a certain position and they should be here or should be there, you don't have a clue what you're going to be. You don't have a clue what you're going to grow into. Just keep grinding and keep working, man. There's no telling what you might be.
So the funniest thing about it is, like, getting to know all of you guys over the years, there couldn't be somebody who's more, like, defined personality-wise as a defensive player. That's what's so funny, because when I was looking it up, I was like, wait a minute, so they don't have him as fullback this first year, and then it has you leaving after your senior year, and I was like, wait a minute, what? And then when I started going through it all, like, would you have, if there had not been that many injuries, would you have stayed on the offensive side of the football?
There's a good chance, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, I could have, back when fullbacks, like, really existed. That's back when you had them, so... Yeah, I mean, I could have, and I still stayed there for my. I still played goal line and short yardage,
yeah,
at fullback. So I still did some of that, but no, it definitely would have been an option. You know, honestly, like Georgia Tech and the other schools, like Georgia O'Leary. Every time I see him, I went to UCF and did several Thursday night games.
Yeah,
and literally every time I see him, you'd still be playing in the NFL if you had come to Tech and played H-back. you still in LA, pal. I'm like, Coach O'Leary, we deuced you up like 3 years in a row, bro. Like, I was okay defensive end too, but literally it was like, man, you need to play. And even Kirk and all those guys that we've ever done stuff with all the time, that's what the comment I always get is H-back would have been a great thing for you. So who knows, man? The position is always interesting, but it's always a circumstance. Because I moved to defensive end, Ron, because Charles Grant and all those guys left for the NFL. We didn't have anybody in hand. So they kind of threw me at the defensive end, and then we had fun.
Well, I think it worked out. The accolades, were incredible as I was digging through them, because, you know, they were talking about, like, is he arguably the most decorated defensive player in the history of Georgia? And you're like, man, actually, when you think of all these first-team awards, like, just, you know, this chubby fullback – next thing you know, he's one of the all-time great defensive players of Georgia. Hey, thanks for everything over the years, and have a great season. I'll be watching. I can't wait to probably run into you at some point on the road, all right? So thank you.
Fine. Appreciate it, Ryan. Thank you.
Okay, that'll do it for me. Check me out at The Ringer 3 days a week. It's going to be the Russillo Show, the Ryan Russillo podcast is what we're going to call it. So I'll be doing kind of what I want in the middle of the week on one of them, and then, you know, two are mostly going to be football. Then I'll be up with Bill Simmons usually once a week. So thanks for everything. Thanks to Cerruti. I can't wait for your next big thing, so pay attention to all Cerruti stuff. I'll be tweeting that out as well for when he's able to announce what he's doing. And everybody, enjoy the college football season.